trying to do for long-term conditions. I appreciate that your work is broader, but we feel that for us, MSK and what could be done is a really important part of our work for long-term conditions. I'll talk about how we're approaching it in terms of our strategy, but also the work that we're supporting ARMA with in terms of the clinical networks and the formal partnership arrangement that has recently been established. And I believe we've got a lot of time afterwards for getting into more discussion about any of this. So first things first, I wanted to just quickly explain the title. We are very, very clear that for us, if we're going to transform the care of long-term conditions for people, for their carers, for their families, we have to focus on what matters most. Not necessarily the disease, not necessarily the clinical outcomes, but what matters to that person and their situation. Our goal overall is about improving quality of life and experience of end-of-life care for people with long-term conditions and their carers. And we believe that the way to do that is to deliver person-centred, coordinated care. And we use the definition that National Voices have developed with people with long-term conditions, who very clearly set out that for them, what that means is that their care is planned with people who work together, understand them and their carers, put them in control, and coordinate and deliver services to achieve their best outcomes. So what matters to them? In terms of the challenge, I'm pretty sure you will all know most of these stats, but I thought it was just worth contextualising again what we're trying to do in the face of what's happening. So we know, in fact, the 15 million figure is quite a way out of date now, so that's much more than 15 million these days. We know that, though, we have 50% of all GP appointments are for people with long-term conditions, 70% of bed days, 70% of the total budget. We now know that in terms of multimorbidity, we've been talking about the challenge of multimorbidity for quite a while. We're now getting the stats through that at least 30% of people who have long-term conditions have more than one. And we also know that 30% of those have more than three. And obviously, we also know that that increases with age and deprivation. But we also know that social isolation is a big risk factor as well. We have been incredibly good at helping people live longer, but we've been pretty poor at understanding how to help people who are living longer live well. We still focus on the disease despite all best intentions rather than the person, and that's the system that's set up to do that, not just the actual individual interactions. We've got increasing evidence that we're over-treating and that in some instances that is causing harm due to interactions with medication or interventions. And we still have a system that's set up to work really well as individual components rather than together, and we know that that causes duplication and waste, let alone burden of treatment for people who are having to keep going into lots of different services at lots of different times. And in the face of all of that, as we all know, big challenges around the money. Fortunately, we now only have to find 22 billion rather than the 30, so good news there in the next 5 years that we'll be able to focus on that. So just in terms of the vision, talks about the challenge of demand, talks about the challenge about supply. So for us, what we're trying to focus on in terms of the transformational change is a health and wellbeing service that isn't just about illness. So how do we and what can we do to support people where we have a focus on promoting wellbeing, promoting resilience, helping people stay well or helping them recover as quickly as possible when they aren't well, stopping deterioration of disease as early as possible, and stopping people collecting diseases as early as they do at the moment. And equally for us, what we're also thinking about is how do we help people age well? We are very clear that we have to get real about giving people greater control over their health. So how do we properly embed care and support planning? So that is the linchpin around which care is delivered, and it's based on people's own goals and needs. How do we actually do that in conjunction with carers and their families so that the needs and supports of a patient aren't done in isolation without understanding that environment in which they're living? And how do we make sure that we're also recognising when needs and preferences change so that we don't just pigeonhole people in a box at a point in time and then forget about them, for want of a better description? So how can we get a timely response to those changing needs so it means that we don't end up with people in crisis? We're clear that we've got a lot of technologies that we could do better at using as part of a broader system. So we need to move away from putting a bit of kit in someone's home and thinking that's the solution to understanding how does technology as part of the whole system of delivery of care actually work best. We need to move away from the one size fits all. And as you'll see from the work that's being done with the vanguards that have recently been announced, that is very much looking at how do we take principles of what works, but look at exploring local adaptations for that best suit local circumstances. We obviously want to improve the coordination of care between services for people that need it, but also broader than just health and social care. So we regularly just talk about integrating care around health and social care providers and needs, but actually we know that there's a raft of public services that could also offer huge opportunities to work better together. And we're doing work at the moment with the fire service, for instance, which is just fantastic, the enthusiasm they have around what they could do to help health. And lastly, we know that we have to focus on value-based commissioning if we're going to do this right, and we have to help commissioners understand the decisions that they're making and the benefits they will be able to see over what period of time. So that's fine, we'll do that by 2020. And our goal is to stop using the word integration, actually, because we have an obsession about thinking integration can only happen if we put things together, if we make structural reorganisation the way we'll deliver any of this. And actually, what we know from the ground up is that if we can support practitioners, services, patients and communities to be able to work together to coordinate it at that level, then we will get the improvements that we're after. And structural reorganisation may happen next. In terms of how we feel that in order to do this, we need to deliver, we have basically been working on a framework and using an evidence-based approach that's come from Ed Wagner's chronic care model, the Diabetes Year of Care programme, so various things that have taken these components and proven that they're the most effective things to ensure are present. So the framework essentially has the four components around empowering patients and carers, and actually that should also read communities. Professional collaboration, and as I said, broader than just health and social care. Ensuring that we do implement best practice, both in terms of the clinical evidence base that we have, but also in terms of organisational processes. And as a foundation, really focusing on that value-based approach to commissioning. So for us in NHS England, our strategy to try and deliver this, key objective for us is to continue to raise professional and public awareness of and engagement with person-centred care. And there's a number of approaches that we're taking to do that, which what I sort of should have said at the outset in terms of how we would really welcome input from ARMA members in all of these objectives. I'll try and pull out some ones I'm aware of, but equally if you can sit there and think of other things we should be thinking about, then please do let us know. So just in terms of the engagement and awareness side of things, we're just in the process of finalising what's being termed our Bloomsbury Declaration, which is just because we happen to be in Bloomsbury. But it essentially is trying to get a system-wide agreement as to what person-centred care actually means for long-term conditions from a health perspective, to try and encourage and support practitioners on the ground to be supported by the system to actually help people with long-term conditions feel like they are receiving person-centred care. That's just about to go live, not the right word, out for wider consultation, and we very much appreciate feedback and views from you as to how that resonates with your own work and your own circumstances. We have an engagement strategy, which is an ongoing piece of work, where we're looking at different activities in which we can engage particularly clinicians, but also people with long-term conditions to support clinicians, so that it's a two-way approach to how we can actually make this happen. Lots of blogs, social medias, things like that we do as well. So equally, we're on Twitter if anyone wants to follow us, not just Frederico. And we're about to start a campaign on person-centred care. So again, thoughts, comments, ideas on that would be great. We have as a second objective the ongoing improvement in evidence and supporting commissioners to implement the evidence in order to commission better care. So as I mentioned, the LTC framework, we have within that, and under the four components, a number of evidence-based interventions, resources, etc., to help people in different areas think about what might work best for their population. We now have over 50 of the 209, I think we have now, CCGs using it. So their use will also help us develop the evidence base. And we're also about to kick off a piece of work modelling interventions across the life course of long-term conditions from single disease through to multiple and complex comorbidity and through to end-of-life care. We have a third objective around the enablers. Very clear that a lot of the enablers to make this happen do sit with NHS England. So some of the ones we're looking at are around data and incentives, for instance. We have an LTC dashboard which sets out at a population level a sort of high-level detail around how you're doing with long-term conditions, both at a CCG and a local authority footprint. And that enables people to dig down into more detail. And we've been looking at how we add to that wealth of data in particular cohort areas, which obviously would include MSK. We know that there are particular weaknesses in some data sets, such as end-of-life care, so we're doing some specific focus work on that. But we're also doing a broader piece of work looking at what do person-centred care outcomes look like. So what do they actually mean and how do we measure them? And again, how do we track outcomes across the life course of long-term condition care? I've already mentioned personalised care and support planning. We're really clear that it's a fundamental component of delivering this, and it doesn't matter whether that's a simple app-based approach to just helping you manage your ongoing meds or healthy lifestyle approach to whatever your condition is, or whether it's a full-blown multidisciplinary end-of-life care plan that will help people experience better death and be able to plan for that with their families better. What I should have said is, some of the things we're doing around that. We're working as part of the Coalition for Collaborative Care, and I think you are also a member of that coalition. And that for us is a great opportunity, brings together a huge range of stakeholders across the system, both statutory, but also Royal Colleges and charities, to help us have a coherent and a consistent approach to what we're trying to do with person-centred care for long-term conditions. And they have a core plank of their work around supporting local areas to implement care planning. We're also looking at things like the summary care record, how to maximise use of that to share the relevant information, but also to be able to have a coordinated approach to access to that. And how we can use we have an unplanned admissions enhanced service that we could do better in terms of who to target and how to offer support for the cohort that are part of that. Fifth objective is around the increasing coordination and continuity of care. We continue to support the development and testing of new models. So we work with various areas around how do we actually support community-based approaches to care. We look at different networked approaches around that, different examples of the principles that could be adapted elsewhere. We obviously have the vanguards that have just been set up, although 29, and there are a lot of other areas that aren't vanguards, so we need to continue to support both. And we're looking at specifics within models around things like workforce. So for long-term conditions, what do we actually want from a current and future workforce, and how do we support changes in that? And I've already talked about the fire service and looking at how we can support the development of models that include fire and rescue services as a wider community provider. But we're also doing work with care homes and hospices. And then lastly, we're very clear that what I've talked about, those five previous objectives, are about long-term conditions for everybody, irrespective of what your condition is. We need to support improvement overall. But we also know there are big areas of inequality. So we know, for instance, that if you're in a care home, your healthcare suddenly dramatically changes just because you change postcode. We know that older people often don't get treatment because they're old, not necessarily because they couldn't benefit from it. Neurological conditions have the worst quality of life of all. MSK have the second worst quality of life for all, but there are other reasons why we need to do work on that, which I'll come to in a moment. And we know that if you haven't got cancer, then you probably don't get brilliant palliative care. So there are specific areas of inequality that we do know we want to focus on, in addition to looking at how do we support improving a system-wide approach to long-term conditions overall. So just focus now on the Clinical Networks project, and I guess why we believe it's important, and I'm assuming that this resonates with why you feel it's important, but as I've just said, we know that second worst quality of life. We obviously know that the expenditure just in the health service, let alone the wider economic spend, is huge, and therefore a huge opportunity to do something different. And obviously, in terms of working days lost, that impacts on all of us and accounts for why DWP are really interested in working jointly with health on how we could address some of these problems. So why are we supporting? Well, I would be doing a disservice if I didn't say partly it was down to Peter Kay's leadership and tenacity to make sure we listened, and we listened good and hard, and did something. But a big part of it is the fact that actually there's a massive amount of synergy. So your visions and plans that you have for this project firmly align, we believe, with ours for long-term conditions as a whole, but also for MSK as a specific cohort, a specific population. So why would we want to do anything else other than join on with what's already going on, with the fantastic work that we can support rather than do something separate? So what we hope is that, as I said, we want to help build on what's already been done to add value where we think we can as a partner in this, to bring any expertise and some resource, albeit very limited, but at least a little bit of resource to help make some progress faster than maybe there would have been. And then the final bit I just wanted to cover was the formal partnership arrangement, which I know is a new thing. And essentially, it's been set up because there's a huge recognition at a senior level now, not least because we've been all saying this for a very long time, that we rely on partners such as yourself to deliver what is needed. We don't do it in a little block and just on our own. We therefore have the formal partnership arrangement set up to try and really improve a two-way dialogue and the opportunity for co-production where there hasn't potentially been before. It's really difficult, as I'm sure you'll appreciate, with the number of different independent organisations, colleges, charities, whatever they may be, to try and have meaningful conversations with every single one and to try and ensure we're taking on board the views and the perspectives of all of those different ranges of organisations. So for us, the ability to have a formal partnership such as this with yourselves as ARMOR as a collective was really important so that we don't miss out in really important members or really important perspectives. We don't necessarily just listen to, as previously in DH, was often the people with the loudest voices. So for us, this is a really important relationship to have. It doesn't replace their existing relationships. So Peter's been working really closely with you all for a while. This is not about replacing that. This is about trying to offer at a more strategic level for NHS England the ability for you to influence, understand, hear about what's going on across the broadest context, and us be able to feed in asking you for views, thoughts and comments on developments that are helpful for us all to hear about. So it is flexible because it does depend on the partner as to how the arrangement works. There isn't a list of how to do it right or how it works best. It's literally an evolving approach that we are aiming to suit both ends of the partnership. So whatever will work for ARMA and whatever will work for NHS England is the way that we'll approach this relationship. The final thing to say is we live in this sort of world where things change, and I think what we know in the NHS is that change is pretty much constant, but the thing we have to have in mind is what our end goal is, and that should stay the same. How we get there might just need to change depending on what happens next. Thank you very much.